Good evening.
Turn my microphone on. It's great to be here. It's great to see you all this evening. Thank you for having me. I'm going to get this situated in a second. I got to tell you all a little story. So when Abby was looking at staying at Creekside last year, or for next year, we were planning a D.C. trip. So all the fifth graders in the county go to Washington, D.C., and it's a big deal, okay? And I'm talking about all of the fifth graders. Maybe not all the county, but at least at Creekside, which is like half the county, okay? So all of them are going to there, and, you know, we're planning the trip, and we're saving the money, and Sarah elected to go because I'm not crazy. That sounds like a terrible, terrible time. So, yeah, that was very nice. She elected to go. Now, we went to a thing with all the parents, and, you know, someone's there, and he's explaining it all to us. It's Mr. Taylor. And I'm just sitting there the whole time, I'm like, how much are they paying this teacher to be the chaperone to take all these kids to Washington, D.C.? And he gets up there and he says, y'all, we do this every year and I just love it. And I'm like, that ain't right, he's telling a lie. There's no way. And he's smiling, I thought, that guy's telling a lie, but he's doing it well. So I go up to him afterwards and I want the real story. Okay, I'm like, Mr. Taylor, thank you for doing all this. How is it really? I mean, is it real bad? I said, what's the worst part of it? I just had to know. I just wanted to get real with him for a second. It's like, you're very nice, and I know that this seems fun. How is it really? And he said, it's a lot of fun. And the kids have a lot of fun. They learn a lot. And they're walking a lot, and they pack a lot into a short trip, but they have a lot of fun. I said, okay, well, what's the most difficult part of it? And he said, I'll tell you the most difficult part of it. The parents give the kids their money, okay? Or the parents give the teachers their money. So these kids that are in fifth grade get like, I don't know, anywhere from $20 to $60 to go to Washington, D.C. So it might as well be $1 million to fifth graders, okay? They're all little Donald Trumps. They're walking around. They've got $1 million in their pocket. He said the most difficult part of the whole trip is to get those kids to get up to Washington, D.C. with $1 left to their name. He said, on the way there, when they stop at a truck stop or a service station, that's the worst part of the trip. Because these kids are going in there, and they're grabbing 10 Snickers bars, okay? And they're grabbing little spoons with the city name on them, and they're grabbing little cups. It's like, no, that's a shot glass. Go put that back. You don't need a little cup. You're not going to come home from this trip with a little cup that says Pulaski, Tennessee, okay? There's no need. He said that was the worst part of the trip. And if he can get them there and get them to spend their money on something to do with the government, something to do a part of the trip, then they will have succeeded. He ended the story by saying, it's really tough to get these kids to just have some self-control. When I learned I'd be talking about this topic, I thought that was the perfect story for you. That's what we're talking about tonight, is self-control. Thank you all for being here. It's already up there. I think I got my clicker here. I do. Great. One of the first things I want to do when we start off tonight talking about self-control is I just want to look at a few passages in the Bible that speak to self-control and literally have the word self-control or control in the passage, okay? What the Bible says. We're going to turn to every one of these, so y'all just hang on. Please get your Bibles out and turn with us. Let's turn to Galatians chapter 5, verse 22. Galatians 5, 22. I'll give y'all just a minute to get there. I think the iPad people are there faster than the old book people, right? All right, here we are. Galatians 5:22. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. Against those things, there is no law. I love the end part of that passage. There's not a law against self-control. Who's going to make a law against something like that? Let's continue on to Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1. Titus 1 and verse 8. And this is the qualifications for elders. Excuse me, I'm going to back up to verse 7. Titus 1, 7. For an overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. Verse verses 3 through 5. For this is the will of God, your sanctification, that you abstain from sexual immorality, and that each one of you know how to control his own body in holiness and honor. Let's go to the Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 25. Let's turn all the way back there. Proverbs chapter 25. This is such a good passage. Verse 28. A man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. I think anyone that has read the story of Jericho and how the land of Canaan was conquered, I think we all understand the importance of walls back then, right? And what that means, what that meant for their defense. So a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. And let's go to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 19 through 20. Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. I love reading passages about self-control. And y'all, I've cherry-picked a few of these, or five of them. There are lots more. These are just the ones I picked out. Of course, the fruit of the Spirit, I think a lot of us know. I love that one. And these are such good passages. The whole point of this summer series and the whole idea of this is that we should be becoming more like Jesus. Okay, and that's what we're going to focus on tonight. So when it comes to self-control, we need to look at a few examples of Jesus. Turn with me to Luke chapter 4. We're going to look for a minute at how Jesus was tempted in the wilderness. In Luke chapter 4. And if y'all will bear with me, I'm going to read it all. Verses 1 through 13. And Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, returned from the Jordan and was led by the Spirit in the wilderness for 40 days, being tempted by the devil. And he ate nothing during those days. And when they were ended, he was hungry. The devil said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command this stone to become bread." And Jesus answered him, "It's written, man shall not live by bread alone." And the devil took him up and showed him all the kingdoms of the world in a moment of time. And he said to him, "To you I will give all this authority and their glory, for it has been delivered to me, and I will give it to whom I will. If you, then, will worship me, it will be all yours." And Jesus answered him, "It is written, you shall worship the Lord your God, and him only shall you serve." And he took him to Jerusalem, and set him on the pinnacle of the temple, and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, throw yourself down from here, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning to guard you. And on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against a stone." And Jesus answered him, "It is said, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." And when the devil had ended every temptation, he departed from him until an opportune time. I really like that end part of that where it says, and he had tempted him with every temptation. Let's continue in Matthew chapter 26. Matthew chapter 26. Verses 51 through 54. Thank you for following along with me. And behold, one of those who were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest and cut off his ear. And then Jesus said to him, "Put your sword back into its place, for all who take the sword will perish by the sword. Do you not think I can appeal to my Father, and he will at once send me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then should the scriptures be fulfilled that it must be so?" Boy, you're talking about, there's a lot of sentences in the Bible, and that is one that really hits me hard. At any moment, Jesus could have ended everything that was going on. He could have made a petition to God and had legions of angels and gotten out of that situation. I think a lot of times when we're tempted and we're dealing with difficulties, we may not feel like there's a way out, or we may just not see it. It may not be plain. There was a plain way out to Jesus right here. He was about to endure something very terrible, and he had enough self-control not to get out of it. Of course, whenever we talk about Jesus and compare him to us, and you know, people may say, "Well, yeah, he was a man, and he was on earth, but he was perfect because he had something different, right? He was the Son of God. He came down to the earth. He did have that. But was he like us? Did he have our nature? Did he have every temptation that we did?" That's a pretty easy answer. Let's turn over to Hebrews chapter 4, verse 15. Hebrews 4, verse 15. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. I take that word very literally, every respect. He was tempted in every respect, and yet without sin. I find great comfort in that. I find great comfort to know that he was able to come down here and face all of the temptations that we were, and he didn't fail. What seems to me like an insurmountable task, to be sinless and to have just utmost self-control, he did it. He did it. It's very impressive to me, and I think it should be encouraging to every one of us. The point of this lesson tonight is everyone in this audience has failed. Every one of us has not mastered self-control. Every one of us has sinned. As I look out at all of you over here, and all of you over here, no one in this audience is a master of self-control like Christ was. Certainly not me. Certainly not me. It's very interesting how Sarah found out that I was doing this sermon. She got a card from in the back when those came out, and we got in the car, and she looked at it, and she said, "Wow, you're preaching first. Wow. You're preaching on self-control." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Why did they pick you?" Thank you very much. Thank you. If I'd said that, I'd have been in the doghouse. Women can't get in the doghouse. So I just let it go and smiled and grinned. But in all honesty, it's true. And you know who decided I would speak on that topic? Me. Tony gave me a sheet and said, "You get to pick your topic." And that's the one I picked. A lot of the topics, most of the topics we're going to be discussing in this summer series, I have trouble with and we need to improve on, right? Y'all, this is number one for Will Ogles. This is why I'm in front of you tonight, to talk about self-control. So what I think we ought to do, what I've decided, is we're going to take three ways that we can improve our self-control, okay? We're never going to be masters of it. I tell you what, we can get a lot better. And these are three ways that I feel that really helped me, and I'm going to share those with you tonight through some stories we find in the Bible. The first one I want to discuss, is to make good decisions early. I think a lot of the times when we're faced with sin and when we're faced with situations of lack of self-control, we've gotten to ourselves in these positions that it's almost just insurmountable to get out of. So I think a way to have better self-control is to avoid some situations. In these three ways we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to start out in each one with some biblical examples, all right? So let's first look at Daniel. When it comes to making good decisions early, tell you what, Daniel is on top of it. Turn to me to Daniel chapter 1. Daniel chapter 1. I'm going to start reading verse 5. The king assigned to them, Daniel and all his friends, a daily portion of the food that the king ate and of the wine that he drank. They were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time they were to stand before the king. And among these were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah of the tribe of Judah, and the chief of the eunuchs gave them names. Daniel he called Belteshazzar, Hananiah he called Shadrach, Mishael he called Meshach, and Azariah he called Abednego. And let's keep going. Just ignore that. We're going further. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or the wine that he drank. Therefore he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him to not defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and the compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. This passage right here is a perfect example of making decisions early. I feel like, and this is conjecture, I feel like if Daniel had maybe been set down at the king's table and had the food put in front of him, would it have been more difficult to refuse then? Would it have been more difficult in the heat of the moment with no preparation to say, I can't really do that and kind of make a big stink? I think it would have been. So what does Daniel do? Daniel decides in his heart early on, he's not going to eat the king's food and he's not going to defile himself in that way. And so he makes preparations to be able to handle that. He made a good decision early on. I think that's very important. Let's go look at Daniel again. Turn with me to Daniel chapter 6, a long way over. Long way over to Daniel chapter 6. And I'm going to start reading from verse 7. All the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects and the satraps and the counselors and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes a petition to any god or man for 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast in the den of lions. And now, O king, establish the injunction and the sign of the document so that it cannot be changed. according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. And therefore King Darius assigned the document and injunction. Okay? Y'all know why these people did this. Because Daniel was on the top and they wanted to bring him down. And they knew that he decided to pray to God every single day and that he would continue to do so. Let's keep reading. Verse 10. When Daniel knew that the document had been signed, he went to his house where he had windows in his upper chamber open towards Jerusalem. He got down on his knees 3 times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. This is another perfect example of how Daniel had decided early on he's going to do this. He got in the habit of doing something. It's a good thing to do, and he's going to continue with it. And it doesn't matter if someone makes a decree. It doesn't matter what all changes. Daniel decided in his heart that he's going to do this, come whatever consequences. There's one more example I want to look at in the Bible, and we're going to go the opposite route this time. We're going to talk about David, and we're going to look at an example of when a decision was not made good early on. Turn with me to 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel. We'll be reading chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. In the spring of the year, the time when kings go out to battle, David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they ravaged the Ammonites and besieged Rabbah, but David remained at Jerusalem. It happened late one afternoon when David arose from his couch and was walking on the roof of the king's house that he saw from the roof a woman bathing. And the woman was very beautiful. And David sent and inquired about the woman. And one said, "Is this not Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Hittite?" And so David sent messengers and took her, and she came to him and he lay with her. Okay. This right here is a perfect example of not making a good decision early. Walking on the roof is not a bad decision. If I had a roof to walk on, I would walk on it, okay? I would fall on my current roof. But that sounds like a nice time. So David's out walking on the roof. The problem that we see is, as what happened with most sin, is it's a chain of events, right? It's like a train of sin. And it may come on real, real subtle at first, but then it gets going real strong and you can't stop it. David's mistakes were, when he saw her bathing, that should have been the moment he turned away, right? That's game over. Bathsheba's beautiful. That's not his woman. He should have turned away. He didn't. He didn't. He used his power to make a bad decision. He made a poor decision early on, and I think even from what we studied Sunday night, we can continue, and we see how that one bad decision just has a chain of following sin right behind it. That's an example of a decision that was not made good early on. One thing I want us to determine, just like Daniel, is that we need to set in our hearts to do what's right. And I'm going to give us some practical examples here. Let's turn to Colossians chapter 3 and verse 2. Colossians chapter 3 and verse 2. Set your mind on things that are above and not on things that are on the earth. And that's for Colossians 3 and verse 2. And now we're going to turn over to Matthew chapter 6, verses 19 through 21. Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal, but lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. I really want you to focus in on verse 21. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. When it comes to making good decisions early, the key is, do you want it? Do you want it? There's a couple of practical examples. If I were to talk to the mothers in the audience and say, mothers, do y'all find it hard to take care of your children? Does any mother find it hard to take care of their children? Probably not. Why do y'all not find it hard to take care of your children? Because they're in your heart, right? You want to take care of your children. You love taking care of your children. And although that's difficult sometimes, it's not from a lack of trying, right? Try very hard because that's in your heart. I think that comes easy. How many of us in here like to eat? How many of us in here had dinner, lunch, or breakfast today? I think that came pretty easy. Why? Because we wanted it. Because it was in our heart. Right? That's why we are able to make these decisions. When it comes to making a good decision early, what we have to do is we have to want it. Mike Brand just recently ran a marathon. And I like talking to Mike sometimes during the week, and especially as he's gearing up towards his big runs, okay? For those of y'all that don't know, you run a really hard run on one Saturday, and then the next Saturday you kind of take it easy, and then the Saturday following you run another hard run, and you keep inching up that way. And you start out about 5 miles on one Saturday, and then every other Saturday you increase it by 2 to 3. And to the point where you get to where you're running 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, and then you run 20 miles at one time, and you build up to that. It seems like torture. And I'll be honest with you, it absolutely is torture. It is absolute torture, okay? I can tell you, it's horrible. And the days that you have those long runs, those are the days you're not going to feel the best. You're going to have slept wrong, your back's going to hurt, the dog's going to be laying on the bed, and now you got a hitch in your leg because you were curled up in a ball, okay? That happens. Why did you get out and do that? How are you still able to get up and say, I'm going to run 16 miles a day? How did that happen? Because you want it. Because you want it in your heart. Because it's right there. And it doesn't matter what comes at you. You're going to do it. It can be raining. It could be snowing. It could be 105 degrees outside. And you're going to do it anyway. And you're going to feel miserable. But when you get done, you're going to feel great. And you know why you got out there in the first place? Because you wanted it. Earlier this year, I was at a work conference. And I rode back with this girl named Jenny and all of her team. And it was a lot of fun. We went out and ate Mexican food before we got on the plane. And we got on the topic of smoking, which is just great. It was a great topic to get on. And we talked about smokers and the difficulties they face. And Jenny used to be a smoker. Okay, and Jenny's, I think, 35 now. And she smoked from 20 to 30 years old. Her mom was a smoker and still smoked. Her grandmother was a smoker for many, many years and then passed away. And we got on the topic of smoking. And, you know, when I had thought about doing a marathon and I had read into that, they said, one of the toughest things you can do is run a marathon, but it doesn't come close to quitting smoking. That's one of the toughest things you can do in this entire world. So I had to ask her. Like, Jenny, I just want to be honest and ask you, how did you quit smoking? How did you stop that habit? I've heard it so terrible. She said, well, I'll tell you. The first 3 days you go through the physical symptoms, and that's really rough. But what nobody prepares you for are the cravings, the things that hit you at the weird times. The things that hit you at the oddest times, and they'll hit you strong. And then all it takes is one, and you're gone. It takes just one, let me just have one more smoke, just one more, and I'll be fine. And the next thing you know, you're at the service station buying 2 or 3 packs the very next day. And she told me that, and I thought, yeah, okay, well, how did you quit? And she said, well, let me tell you how I quit. I wanted to. And she said she decided at 30 years old, she smoked before you were allowed to smoke. She shouldn't have done that, of course. She smoked for a long time. She said, but you know, I decided that I just didn't want to be sick anymore. And I saw what it did to my mom. And I saw what it did to my grandmother. And I just decided I didn't want to smoke anymore. And then I just never went back to that. And I was like, okay, well, did you use like a patch or something? She was like, no, I just really wanted to quit. I just really wanted it. And y'all, I'll be honest, there's a lot of stuff. A lot of times that you may want to do something and we may need some help. There's nothing wrong with that. But what she said really, really struck a chord in me. That was where her heart was. That was where her heart was. She made that decision and it kind of became easy. She still had cravings, she said. But then every time she was faced with that kind of temptation, she said, well, okay, that's fine. Sure, I can smoke at any moment. Do I want to? Nah, I don't. It wasn't greater than what she really wanted. With all these ideas in mind, that's what it means to make a good decision early. I think a lot of times when we struggle with self-control, it's because our heart's not in the right place. For most of us in here, something that we want to do, we really want to do, we can get it done because we want it. So when it comes to having more self-control and making good decisions early, the very first thing, one of the most important things we can do is want it. Ask yourself that next time you're faced with temptation. Okay. I understand this is what God's law says. I understand I shouldn't be doing these things. I understand what the penalties are. I understand what the rewards are. Do I want that? Let's continue. The second part that I want to get to is avoiding situations. As we saw this in David's example, a lot of times, y'all, our heart's set on things. And I could only say just about 700,000 times in my life has my heart been set on something and I've done something else, okay? So what's another good practical example to avoid, to make good decisions early? You gotta avoid situations. As with most things in life, if you don't want stuff to happen, or you want to limit the amount of things happening, Get away from it. Get away from it. If I didn't want to talk to some people in this audience, I'd just stay away from them. If I walk by them every single time, chances are I'm going to have to talk to them. It's a really simple example. It's a really simple example, but it makes sense. Let's look at Proverbs chapter 7. Proverbs chapter 7. I'm going to start reading at verse 6, and I may end a little early on this one. For at the window of my house I have looked out through my lattice, and I have seen among the simple, I have perceived among the youth, a young man lacking sense, passing along the street near her corner, taking the road to her house in the twilight of the evening, and at the night in darkness. And behold, the woman meets him dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart, and she is loud and wayward, and her feet do not stay home. And now in the street, now in the market, and in every corner she lies in wait. Now I'm going to skip down to verse 22. All at once he follows her, as an ox goes to the slaughter, or a stag is caught fast, till an arrow pierces his liver, and a bird rushes into his snare. He doesn't know it'll cost him his life. What's the point of this proverb right here? What's the point? Is the point of this proverb, when you're faced with temptation, that you just need to really be strong and really do your best? No. The point of the proverb is to not even get in that situation. Like an ox to the slaughter, he walks towards her house. He goes out where he knows she's going to be. The whole point of this proverb is to avoid that situation, because there are times when we're going to get caught in the snare and it's going to be really tough to get out of it. Look at 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter chapter 5. First Peter 5 verses 8 through 9. Be sober-minded and be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. Y'all, the sin we face and the difficulties we face, these are orchestrated on purpose. The way I kind of read this is that Satan's playing a game with us. This is all just a game to him. And everything he tries to do to get us to sin, to get us to fall, to get us to turn our back on God, it's just a game. It's just a game to him. It's fun. You know, he's crafty. He's going to get you. Every person in here has a struggle. And this person's struggle and that person's struggle and that person's struggle are completely different from each other. And there's other people on earth that are facing it, but they're completely different. Let me tell you, what we understand from this passage is that Satan knows your struggle, and he's after you, and he's going to get you. One of the best ways I think we can make a good decision early is to not put ourselves in that situation. Because let me tell you, Satan knows if he's got you in some situation, you're gone. What does this mean, not be in that type of situation? Greg Chandler said one time in a lesson at Gooch Lane, he said, being alone with your girlfriend is not going to be the time that you have a spiritual epiphany. The line at the liquor store is not going to be the moment where you feel filled with zeal to make a good decision. Where you're in a fit of anger and you've gone around somebody that's made you upset and you're about to say something to them, that's really not when you're going to have a clear and level head, is it? No, that's when Satan's got you. That's when Satan's got you. And we have to make good decisions early, and we have to do our best to avoid those situations. Don't give him a chance. Don't give him a chance. Y'all, there are times when we will be faced with situations. We have to stop, we have to think, and we have to pray. Let's look at just a few examples here. Look at Joseph, Genesis 39. Joseph in Genesis 39, verses 4 through 10. I'm going to skip down just a little bit. So Potiphar, he had left all that he had in Joseph's charge, and because of him, he had no concern about anything but the food he ate. Joseph was handsome in form and appearance, and after a time, his master's wife cast his eyes on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused his master's wife, and he said, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He's not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" This is a situation where Joseph is stuck in this situation. Okay, he is not going to be able to get away from her all the time. Avoidance and avoiding the situation and not putting himself in that place, it can't really happen, because that's where he works. Okay, he's a very busy guy. Satan's got him. The Bible doesn't say that this woman is ugly, and the Bible sometimes has nice ways of saying that ladies are ugly. I think to this woman that I imagine she's very good looking. I imagine this was a big temptation to him. Time and time and time again, she's after him. I imagine that was a huge temptation to him. How does he get out of that? How does he withstand that temptation? He just stops and thinks for a minute. Okay, I'm in this situation. Here are these consequences. Let me just think about it for just a second. Joseph considers it, and he thinks for a moment. First of all, he takes responsibility. I love that. I love what he says right there. Let's see there. Let me get to it. He is not greater in this house than I am. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? At no point does Joseph say, y'all have put me in this position. I sinned, and it wasn't my fault. She just wouldn't leave me alone. No. He takes responsibility. He recognizes sin. Y'all, honestly, and I'm skipping ahead to a point, spoiler alert here, okay? I feel like a lot of times our lack of self-control, it happens so fast. Times in my life where I have made terrible, terrible decisions is because it happens so fast. Most of the worst decisions I've ever made were made just like that. And then it's over, and you've made a terrible decision. Joseph stopped for a minute. He had to stop, and he had to think about it. I feel like if we do that, if we can stop for a minute and use this example here like Joseph, we may be able to avoid some situations in our life. We may be able to avoid making some bad decisions. So how can we improve? How can we stop and think and pray? I told you, spoiler alert, okay? Sin happens without thought. It happens very quick. Think before you act. Y'all, I'm going to tell you just a quick story. Most of you that are affiliated with the Bible school, y'all know Coach Merle, Coach Bill Merle up there, okay? And when I was in school there, and he's probably done it for years, but he did it when I was there. Whenever you're talking to him and you ask him a question, you say, Coach Merle, I don't know, why is the sky blue? Coach Merle, why'd you do this? Why'd you put in this player? Coach Merle, why'd you do this? Any question you ask him, you can ask him, Coach Merle, what are we having for lunch today? And this is exactly what he'll do, okay? He'll stop and he'll do his hands like this. I can see some of you laughing that went to the Bible school because y'all know. And he'll put his hand on his lip and he'll just sit there. And I'm sitting there thinking, does the guy have the cafeteria menu memorized? He can just say, I don't know. What's the deal? And then he'll stop and he'll think and he'll come back with an answer. And then one time at Eastside, I think when I was a senior, he gave a talk and he explained, he said some things in his life that he shouldn't. He's rattled off at the mouth before. So he taught himself at any time before he answers, he should just stop for a second and think. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, you don't have to do that all the time. Maybe with some things. But I love that example. That example sticks with me. It sticks with me even till today. And that was a long time ago, it feels like, that he gave that talk. He stopped for a minute. He would stop for a minute. He put his hand over his mouth. Quick to hear. Slow to speak. He really embodied that physically, that he would not talk until he thought about it for a second. And y'all, I think when it comes to how we can improve before saying things, before doing things, I think just stopping for a minute and thinking will really help us. The last one is to pray constantly. What I try to do when I'm facing sin or when I'm facing a decision or when I'm tempted, I really try to pray. Why do I do that? I pray for strength. I pray for encouragement. And to be honest, I feel like if I pray to God and I have just talked to Him, it's really tough for me to make a bad decision because I feel like He's got extra eyes on me right at that moment. I feel like, well, I just talked to Him and now He's looking at me and maybe I should just go do something else and not say that. I think praying constantly, being constantly in prayer can really help us. The more we talk to God, is that a bad thing? That's like one of the fruits of the Spirit. There's not a law against that. There's no law that says we can't talk to God so much. That's a good thing. And the third and final way is good habits lead to heaven. Excuse me. I'm going to turn 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 24. 1 Corinthians in chapter 9, verse 24. Y'all be going to sleep with that rain. I know we hadn't had any in a long time. Tempting. Chapter 9 and verse 24 through 27. Do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things, and they do it to receive a perishable wreath. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I don't run aimlessly and I don't box as one beating in the air. I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. How can we develop good habits? Y'all, when it comes to making good decisions, you gotta be in habits. You gotta have good habits and things that, when I say habits, I mean things that we consider routine. We can't always be stopping and thinking about good decisions all the time, or we're going to be a person that's like this, right? Always up and down. We need to get in the habits of doing some good things. One of the best things that I've understood from the Scripture and I've heard from other people, when it comes to forming good habits, motivation is cheap. It is cheap. Motivation is a $1 bill. What does that mean, motivation is cheap? When it comes to doing a lot of stuff like running, exercising, dieting, more important stuff like visiting the sick, reading our Bible, doing things that are really important. When it comes to doing any stuff like that, motivation is great. How long is motivation great for? How long? I would say from a day to a week and a half max. I think there's some studies on that, right? When you make a New Year's resolution, you got about a week and a half to 2 weeks and that's going to fall off. And you're just going to lose it. Why is that? Most people are so motivated. That's what motivation is. You get excited about something. You're ready to do it. You're pumped up. Your spirit is willing and you're ready to go. But motivation is cheap, y'all. And it's going to fail you. And eventually it's going to fail you. And time again it's going to fail you. And we're cyclical creatures. And we're going to keep getting into failures if we just rely on motivation. When it comes to running, as a perfect example, you can be motivated to get out there the first day. And motivated the first week. And you can be motivated to start a running plan. But after week one, when those muscles are sore, after week two, when some days you go to work and it feels like you can't walk, that motivation is going to be cheap and it's not going to carry you through. So what's the key? Discipline's the key. In the cycle of being able to do something and forming a habit, it goes in this way. I guess I'm opposite, y'all. I'll start over here, okay? It goes motivation, and then motivation turns to discipline, and then discipline turns into a habit. Discipline is the key. When it comes to having self-control, we can't always rely on motivation, y'all, because it's so cheap and you're going to lose it. But that's when discipline can help us. Learning that you don't always just listen to your brain. Sometimes you get into a routine of things, you know you should do it, and you just do it. I guess if you ask Vance Smith, who helped put together our Bible reading plans, when he first did a Bible reading plan, how long did motivation carry him? How long does motivation carry you? Not very far. But let me tell you, if you're really wanting to read your Bible and you forget in the morning and you come in late and it's 10 o'clock, motivation ain't going to get you to read it. But discipline will. When it comes to talking to people and encouraging people, you may not be motivated some days, but discipline will get you there. We have to use discipline to form habits. One of the best, most important ways we can have self-control is just to have good habits, y'all. If we get into the routine of doing good things, there's not a lot of time to make a bad decision. Unlike Andy Griffith, the story of what's your hurry in that sermon, I think we should be in a hurry. Y'all, as Christians, in the example we have in the Bible, we're supposed to be busy people. We're supposed to be exhausted. We're supposed to be looking forward to heaven. Why are we supposed to be exhausted? We need to be doing good things. We need to be constantly busy. The last point I want to make is we need to plan for success or plan for failure. And anything that we actually want to get done, we need to set our heart on it, right? If y'all want to get something done at work, you don't only make a plan for it. If y'all want to go to Disney World, do you call up somebody like Jessica Dunaway and make a plan to go there? Yeah, you do. You make a plan for it. We did. It was great. That's how you do it. You make a plan. Things that we want to succeed in, we make a plan. Things that we want to fail at, we just don't make a plan. And we just don't care. I have had a hard time with this because a lot of times in my life, I just like to ride the roller coaster and ride it out. I'm a big motivated guy, y'all. I love motivation, but it doesn't carry me through. We have to plan for success. We have to make good decisions early, and we have to plan for success. Let's just recap these really quickly. Make good decisions early is what I think probably the most important part. And the examples that we saw with Daniel, you've got to make those good decisions early because we're fallible creatures. But y'all, let me tell you, when our self-control fails us, it'll fail us a lot less if we're putting ourselves in situations that'll get us into trouble. Second one is think and pray. Perfect example with Joseph. He's in these situations constantly. But if we can just take a minute, to think about things, think about what we really want and what's in our heart, I think we'll start making better decisions. It's worked for me a little bit. I've tried. Well, let me go back. And the final one is good habits lead to heaven. We can't always rely on our self-control when things are thrown at us at every moment. We have to make good habits. We have to be in the routine of doing good things, and we have to minimize the amount of chances we're faced with temptation. Through these three things, I see us becoming more like Christ. I think if we can work on these three things and we can master our self-control, we'll become a lot more like Christ. Certainly, we've already fallen and not done it perfectly as He has. We've got a lot of room for improvement. But y'all, I think if we can work on this, we'll be in a lot better situation. The invitation is left open for tonight. I love invitations on Wednesday night because most people think of Sunday as the big religious day. Wednesday night, y'all, the invitation's still open. You know what? I love Tuesday nights too, and I love Thursday nights. Why? Because the invitation is still open. The invitation is wide open. It's open for those of you that need to work on your self-control, like myself. I should probably just sit down now and hear it. I need to work on my self-control. It's open for those of you that have made mistakes and want to come forward and confess those and ask for prayers and help. And y'all, let me tell you, it's open for those that need to be baptized. They need to be added. Don't miss out the best thing to ever happen. Don't miss this. Thank you all for your attention tonight. Let's stand and sing.